on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Monday, April 14th, 2025. And we are now about halfway through April, and certainly the first half of April did not disappoint. For those of you who have been here for the past couple weeks, you know that we have been talking about everything that's been going on in the market, the return of volatility, and the implications for all of us in this potentially new regime. And so because of this, it is now more than ever important that none of us loses focus. And so, as always, the objective of this podcast and radio program is to help you become a better investor. And you can't do that without fully understanding market dynamics and how they might affect your portfolio. Now, to that end, I do want to mention that coming up on April 30th at 1 p.m. Pacific, Justin Klein and I will be hosting a free Invest Talk Wealth webinar. It's all about unlocking the power of custom indexing so you can take your investment strategy to the next level. We'll delve into how to navigate business transitions and plan for long-term success. Other topics will include management and diversification of concentrated investment positions with precision. We will also talk about aligning your investments with your values to prioritize what matters most while achieving financial growth. Seats are limited, so go to investtalk.com and register now for the upcoming Invest Talk Wealth webinar on April 30th. All right, back to the mission at hand. The one that I mentioned is the mission of every day. That is to bring you a mixture of educational and actionable items, which we will go over in a little bit, as well as running down today's market activity. But before we do all of that, because this show is about your finance and investment questions, let's tackle one right now.
I wanted to get your thoughts on ticker symbol ALB, ALB Albemarle. I think that's how you pronounce it. I bought some shares over a year ago. It's only a small percentage of my portfolio, but would you hold longer, trim, or exit? Thank you for your advice. Bye.
Ticker ALB, I'm sure I will butcher the name as well. Albemarle Corporation, it's a global specialty chemicals company. It's headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina. And they got three primary segments, which you can see here. One of their segments is their energy storage segment, then their specialty segment, as well as their Ketjen segment, which is about catalysts. And they're also one of the largest producers of lithium, which is a critical component in electric vehicle batteries and energy storage systems. Now, year to date, they're down about 33.33%, down 38.04% over the past 3 months, down 53.18% over the past year. In terms of growth, growth has stalled a little bit, right? They were growing. If you take into consideration the whole six-year period, which is essentially just where they started in 2019 to where they were in 2024, it was 8.4% on an annualized basis. Now, they did peak out about $9.6 billion in revenue. That was in 2023. But last year, that fell pretty significantly to $5.378 billion in revenue. Now, in terms of geographical exposure, it looks like they have a lot of Chinese exposure. I don't know if you've heard about the trade war. And they got some good South Korean exposure as well. Only 17% of their revenue comes from the United States, which may explain why in the past month they're down 27.67%. The net sales they reported, again, $1.2 billion in the fourth quarter of 2024, was a 48% decline from the prior year's quarter. Now, a lot of this is due to global lithium market dynamics. There's a little bit of a downturn and prices are declining because of this oversupply. And so revenue falls because of that. But as you can see, this business's margins are kind of all over the place, very volatile. And then so in situations where you have revenue declining like this, well, then they move into negative net margin territory. Negative 21.9% last year, projected to be negative 1.8% this year. And so clearly there are some operational cost management issues, their cash flow falling. Got about 11.1% short interest out there. And for a $6.6 billion company, they have about $3.6 billion in debt. So overall, it seems like a pretty levered company. They are not making any money. Their cash flow and profit are headed in the wrong direction. And the market thinks they're still too expensive. And so for ticker ALB, Albemarle Corporation, that is a no from me. Thanks for the call. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all. My main focus point concerns this topic, or rather this question. What are junk bonds? Junk bonds offer higher yields but come with a greater risk of default, making them a complex and potentially lucrative investment option for those willing to accept increased uncertainty. We'll also touch on how the wealthiest Americans may be positioning themselves during this time of heightened volatility and market turmoil, as well as a potential signal from the job market with respect to a drop in the job finding rate and an increase in the amount of time it's taking for people to find new jobs, typically a sign of contraction. Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on a topic we've been talking about all week, or rather for the past week, and that is the flight from the dollar and what that means for American financing. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on investing for kids' future and BOH Bank of Hawaii Corp. As well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestDoc YouTube channel. We may even have an email question again, which is always exciting. Of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk briefly about today's market activity. Please remember you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestDoc voice bank. That number is 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
My name is Robert, and I'm from Florida. Great show. I learned so much from just listening to you.
Hi, this is Susan from New Jersey. I'm calling about AXOA.
How much of the information that came out today on the whole AI play with DeepSeek and all that, how much of that information can you really trust?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
I am very much a person that does not trust Chinese data.
Net income is growing and margins are staying pretty steady.
Let's go take a live call. Paul from Palm Desert.
Let's go to George from San Mateo, who has a question about index funds.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little. Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
Is that a good strategy, or should I be looking at other things?
888-99-CHART. The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. A big switch from last week, as overall it seemed a bit uneventful. Nevertheless, U.S. stock closed higher, improving through the afternoon after seeing some midday softness, though nowhere near they opened. They opened about up 1.5%, but the Dow closed 78 basis points in the positive, the S&P 500 up 79 basis points, NASDAQ up 64 basis points, and the Russell 2000 about 1.11%. Outperformers included pharma, biotech, banks, insurers, asset managers, IBs, all doing well. Looks like relative underperformers, managed care, airlines, hotels, especially on the back of some softer data on travel to the United States from overseas. And apparel and apparel retailers also relative underperformers on the day. Now, something we talked about a lot last week, treasuries, which had a big bond sell-off, were a bit firmer on the day, though not erasing all of the losses from last week in any way, shape, or form. Dollar index down again, down 50 basis points after losing nearly 3% last week. Gold hit an all-time high on Friday, but finished down 60 basis points on the day. And crude oil was marginally higher, but not much activity not much positive movement there. And so this relief rally continued on what I said was a fairly uneventful day, especially by the standards of the past 2 weeks. Biggest tailwind, probably the exemptions that were announced on Friday after the close. Those exemptions were for finished goods within the smartphone, electronics, laptop category, though Trump and his officials were pretty quick to flag the relief as temporary. The Commerce Secretary doing the rounds over the weekend, mentioning that that they would be in a different tariff bucket that should be coming in a month or so. Trump saying the next couple weeks. On the macro data front, not much to report there. Though Tuesday will bring the Empire State Manufacturing for April, as well as the March Import Prices Index. March retail sales will be out on Wednesday, with the headline expected up 1.4% and core seen up 60 basis points. Industrial production for March and the NHB Housing Market Index for April also out on Wednesday morning. And it looks like we get some conversations from some Fed speakers this week, Hammack Schmidt and Chair Powell, as well as the weekly jobless claims and March housing starts, which we will see out on Thursday. So busy week ahead, just not much macro data to report on today. Let's try another fresh question from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. As you know, if you don't just want to listen to us, you would rather, or maybe in addition to, head over to YouTube and take a look at the charts and stuff that we are showing our viewers. Head over there to Invest to YouTube and search Invest Talk with two T's. And while you're over there, if you have a question, well, you can just leave it right there in the comment section, because we are reading each and every single comment. So I'm going to hit you with this one right now on ticker AGX. It says, would love to hear your thoughts on industrial company Argan, AGX. Seems like a good long-term potential with profitability and growth. Let's take a look. Argan AGX is a U.S.-based holding company specializing in engineering, procurement, and construction services for power generation, the industrial sectors, and has a bunch of key subsidiaries, but mostly within both renewable and natural gas-fired plants. They also have telecom infrastructure and industrial fabrication services. About 89% of their revenue comes from the United States. Power services makes up about 80% of their revenue. And pretty much everything else comes from that industrial services component. Now, they've been growing very, very quickly, 29.6% on an annualized basis over the past 5 years. But a lot of that was coming out of the pandemic, where they went from up about 20%, then down a little bit. Great growth 2024 into fiscal year 2025 for them, which ended in January. And projected to see some solid growth into next year as well. Margins also headed in the right direction. They reached a local high at one point in 2022, then back down in 2024, but still growing from there these upcoming years. Now, this company is a fairly small company, about $2.1 billion market cap, and they do not have really much debt to speak of at all. $2.6 million in debt. And so not that levered. You'd expect a company like this that does not have much debt on their balance sheet to maybe capitalize a little bit in equities, but that's not the case, right? They had about 16 million shares outstanding at the end of 2021. It's down to about 13.7-ish million now. So they're not issuing a bunch of shares either. They pay a dividend about 1%. It's about half of where it was for the better part of the last 6 years. Now, forward-looking earnings, 24.4 times, a little bit above the five-year average. But I think a lot of this growth is really powered, this stock price appreciation is powered by this fantastic growth, up 7.71% year-to-date, even though they're up 12% in the past 3 months. Up 146% in the past 52 weeks. Again, robust performance. They've done some good acquisitions, it looks like, over the past year as well. And they increased their share repurchase program in April, which is something that I think you're going to see probably with a lot of companies who are hesitant to invest in this uncertain environment. It makes the most sense to maybe wait a little bit for clarity and float their share price by just buying back a bunch of shares. And so with these plants, with this growth in revenue, I think this is a pretty solid company. Now, that being said, It is a little bit expensive relative to where it has been historically. It is in an uptrend on the 1 year, pretty significant uptrend in the 1 year. Even year to date, it looks very solid relative to the market. I mean, look at this. Coming out of 2024, or rather into the back half of 2024, very, very strong. But I would still wait for a little bit of a pullback here. Looks like we're still a bit a ways from next earnings. So overall, I expect it to just range where it is for some time. Maybe enter a little position here. Wait to see what it looks like, because demand could be contracting, especially in the industrial sectors, which makes up a pretty big portion of this company's business. We're moving into a break, and still to come on my main focus point, more answers to your voicemail questions, and of course, you can call me now live at 888-99-CHART.
April is Financial Literacy Month. For a limited time, you can receive the first 3 months of the KPP Premium Newsletter free. Sign up now at investtalk.com and use the code KPPFLM. And now the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got our first live call. Joel from Castro Valley, how can I help you?
Yeah, hi. I'm interested in a little more information on Ford, automaker Ford in their stock. They're paying an 8% dividend right now, which is pretty good, but I noticed they got a lot of debt. I do have some of it now, and I'm thinking, what do you think about getting some more of that? I'm actually approaching retirement. I'm not there yet, but I'm very close, and I'm trying to look at dividend stocks. What do you think about Ford?
Okay, so, and you were saying you own a bit of Ford's stock, or you own a bit of Ford's debt?
Ford stock.
Okay, Ford stock. Okay. That is all good information. All right, let's take a look at Ford Motor Company. I don't think I have to explain to anybody what Ford does, but they are a, say, American firebrand. I don't even know how to explain it. They are, when I think American company, I'm thinking companies like Ford, like General Motors, right? They're headquartered in Michigan, established in 1903. They make cars, they make trucks. And so, you know, over the past month or so, they're down about 2.12%. Year to date, they're down 1.92%. On the 52 week, they're down about 23%. But today, they were up 4%. And that is likely on the news that there could be some potential relief coming from auto tariffs and auto parts tariffs that have been recently implemented by the president, which could be why maybe near the close, people were hammering Ford up about 4% today. And so that would understandably reduce costs from what a lot of people expected about a week ago. And so that would float the share price. Now, there have been some recalls of their products, which probably isn't really that big of a deal, except for from a reputational standpoint. I think the main focus here has been kind of the transition that a lot of companies are trying to make from being internal combustion car companies to having a dedicated EV production capabilities. And it's been pretty difficult, right? They announced $5.1 billion in losses in their electric vehicle segment last year alone. And so, you know, it's been pretty difficult. A lot of companies are doing what I thought they should have done from the start and transition to a lot of hybrids. I think a lot of people are looking for hybrids. There's a lot of demand there. But either way, they took a step back. And so that's why I think over the past, you know, 3 months or so, year to date, right, they're up about 62 basis points. Now, from a debt perspective, Ford has quite a bit of debt, about $105 billion worth of debt on about a $37 billion market cap. You know, they are paying, their debt tends to be on the worrisome side on debt levels. And so, you know, you got to keep in mind when you're looking at a dividend yield of 6.43% of where they stand right now is that dividends aren't set in stone, right? Their interest coverage ratio, well, it's about 4.5 times. They're doing a good job with their earnings, being able to pay down their debt. But this business is cyclical. If things start to pull back, revenues start to fall, margins start to contract, you could be in a worrisome area here. I think that, you know, given some of these tariff exemptions, it's uncertain how long they will last before implementation, if they're going to be permanent on a lot of companies, not just car companies. And so I'm kind of hesitant here at these types of debt levels to pour additional money into Ford here. I think that's why it's trading at 7x forward-looking earnings. There are worries about their debt levels and what could happen in a recessionary environment where people are not going to continue to buy cars with higher interest rates as well. So for now, I wouldn't sell Ford, but I definitely wouldn't be putting more money into Ford at this moment. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point concerns this question. Probably appropriate given the last question, and that is, what are junk bonds? Well, junk bonds are, put simply, high yield, high risk bonds. They are rated BB or lower, and they offer returns that are higher than investment grade bonds in order to compensate for that risk. And they're called junk because of the speculative nature of them. There is a higher risk that the issuer of these bonds is going to default. And that's why they're trading at lower prices and therefore higher yields. Now, junk bonds can come from anywhere, right? They can be corporations. They can be sovereign governments with weaker credit ratings. They could be companies that are financing leveraged buyouts. It doesn't matter the source that they come from. It's essentially just a designation of how investment worthy are they and what are the risk levels. Now, the default rate kind of tends to fluctuate. Double B bonds historically have been around 18%, you know, in terms of default rate. Triple C rated bonds have exceeded 50% default rates at some times, and the recovery after default tends to vary in terms of how much you will get back for owning the bond relative to you know, the risk of this. And so the trade-off here is what I've been hinting at. It's risk versus return here. If you're the type of investor that can stomach the risk here of potentially losing some, if not all, of your money, well, then junk bonds may be appropriate for you. And so there are different ways to invest in them. Individual bonds, ETFs are another way you can invest in them. And we'll talk more about junk bonds when we come back. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
For the break, we were talking a little bit about junk bonds, and I just have a couple more things to point out if you're interested. The first is that they are highly macro sensitive. During the past week or so, when U.S. Treasury yields were rising, when recessionary risk was increasing, you saw a pretty big widening of credit spreads. And so that's going to affect junk bonds far more than investment grade bonds. Now, if you want to invest in these junk bonds, I would recommend ETFs, right? The biggest risk of holding junk bonds is their credit risk. That's why they have higher yields. And so in order to mitigate some of that concentration risk of an individual bond failing, you can get a high-yield ETF or mutual fund that invests in a wide array of these bonds such that one failing doesn't lose some or all of your capital. Now, it's important to monitor volatility and historical performance and default history of the companies or the entities that have issued these bonds, as well as in those ETFs, what the mixture of ratings are that is aiming to diversify away some of that risk. FINRA's Fund Analyzer, great way to do that. Morningstar, a good way to do that as well. Just keep in mind, again, this is best for risk-tolerant investors. And for those who are willing to stomach that risk, junk bonds can help complement a well-diversified portfolio, but tread cautiously. Now, from time to time, we receive those InvestTalk questions via, get this, email. I'm still surprised by this, but when we get email questions, we like to get to those first because I feel like those are few and far between. And so let's tackle one right now on global payment networks. That's ticker GPN. It says, looking at global payment networks, looks solid mid-cap that makes money and is undervalued. Currently, thoughts on entry for a long-term hold. And so this guy, Global Payment Networks, ticker GPN, very payment, fintech, and software solutions company. It looks like 76% comes from merchant solutions, 24% comes from issuer solutions. Now, they had a new CEO put in place in 2023, and before that, they had a pretty big initiative of acquisition. It's about a $20 billion market cap company with about $17 billion in debt. They have been buying back shares, and they do pay a dividend. For a lot of fintech companies don't pay dividends, and so this is kind of unique in that case. Now, in the past 52 weeks, they're down 31.26%, down 24.09% year-to-date, down 21.31% in the past 3 months. In terms of growth, pretty decent, though started to fall off in terms of rate in the past couple years, and they're projected to fall off again from $10 billion in 2024 to about $9.2 billion in 2025. And in that time, their margins are kind of all over the place, but trending in the right direction. Full disclosure, we did hold this name in one of our strategies until recently when we started to trim away from that. And that's just generally because we feel as though in this environment, you have to be a little bit more strict. The opportunity set has narrowed a little bit. And so because of that, this is one of the names that we decided to trim. Now, calling it undervalued is, I don't know how fair it is, because maybe they're priced a little bit for growth that has, again, slowed significantly, most of that growth from 2019 to 2020. And so overall, you know, I think this company is generally targeting a good area of the market in terms of where it's growing, small and mid-sized businesses. But there's a lot of competition in that area. And so for us, it was just an easy name to trim in a changing market regime. So for GPN, going to have to pass. Thanks for the email. Let's go to James in New York, who has a question about EMN. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
I own it. I'm thinking of adding to it. It looks pretty good, sub $80. Do you think it could get cheaper, or is it a good value?
Yeah, well, you know, things can always get cheaper, and who really knows? But EMN, Eastman Chemical Company, is a chemical company, obviously, a global materials company out of Tennessee. They have advanced materials, chemicals, fibers. And they serve the transportation, building, and construction industries. It is a name that we hold in at least one of our strategies, maybe two of our strategies, but we do hold this name. And it has suffered from what a lot of companies suffered from over the past couple weeks, and that is the news of tariffs. And so that's why, you know, it's down 13% year-to-date, though it is up 1.3% today. Now, it's a fairly, you know, large company, though not too big, about $9.1 billion market cap. They pay a solid dividend. It's about 4.2%, which is higher than it's been over the past 6 years. The revenue started to taper off a little bit, but again, when you're selling underlying commodities, that tends to be where things go if you're a specialty chemical company, right? It's just predicated upon demand, not really anything to worry about in terms of how the company is run. They got about $5 billion in debt, and they're not too leveraged. And cash flow, pretty steady, and they have been buying back shares. I think for us, and the reason why we're still holding on to this name, is because, you know, we think that this is just cyclical, right? It's cyclical reasons why the revenue has been falling. And in that time, you know, margins have been climbing from 7.5% in 2022, trying to be 10.1% this year. That's growing efficiency there. We do like seeing that. Not a lot of debt, solid cash flow, trading at a reasonable price, 9x forward-looking earnings. Average of the past 5 years, about 11 times. So for us, we're holding on to it. We may even add to a little bit more here. That is Eastman Chemical. We do continue to like that name. Thanks for the call. Now, I don't know if you notice, but certainly if you have listened to this show or been alive over the past 2 weeks, you know that the market has been in a little bit of hot water as a result of the administration's tariff plans and abrupt reversal of some of those plans triggered a $7.7 trillion swing and started to rattle both long-term treasuries, short-term treasuries, the dollar, pretty much everything in sight. There was nowhere to hide, generally, for the better part of the last 2 weeks. And so the question is, where are a lot of wealthy investors starting to reorient their portfolios? Because, you know, something that we've already mentioned is a questioning of what has been called the American exceptionalism trade, which is the strength of the dollar, the power of American consumption, and how that has floated U.S. companies. And what we're seeing is a lot of interest in leaving U.S. assets and moving towards Europe, towards Japan, towards foreign currencies. A lot of the wealthy have been what we have been talking about, risk off in consumer discretionary names, your Nikes, your apparel companies. You're seeing that in where sector momentum has been over the past couple months. Now, I think something to stress is for anybody, no matter where they fall on the wealth spectrum, if you have a long enough investment horizon, the best thing to do is stay diversified and to stay patient. Right? They did a survey where partisan lens has affected their response, people's responses to whether they think this is good for markets, whether they think this is bad for markets. And I think that's actually something that I talked about with one of our clients today who, you know, happened to be on the more conservative side and asked, you know, obviously we have to tread carefully. And my response was, you know, our job is to be apolitical, right? Our job is to be as objective as possible, to not impart our own political ideologies on what our perceptions are of the markets. I let the markets talk to me, right? When the market is stressed, when treasuries are rising, when the bond market is starting to fall apart, when the dollar is falling, that is trillions and trillions of dollars telling you what market participants think of what policy implementation is going to be. And so no matter if you're on the wealthy side, no matter if you're on the soon-to-be wealthy side, let's call it, I think that generally, over the long term, as a long-term investor, volatility, down markets provide you a good opportunity to invest in well-diversified, well-positioned, strong, balanced companies. Let's keep things moving and play a fresh caller question now.
I had a question about investing for my kids' future. I have a family member that wants to give all three of my boys a lump sum to help them with college. And we looked into 529 plans, and our worry is that they don't go to school, then they'll be penalized and then still pay taxes. So would we be better off just doing a taxable account for them that, yes, they'll pay some taxes, but at least then we can invest in what we'd like to instead of being limited like some of the 529s are with what you can invest in. I don't think we could do a Roth or anything because that would have to wait till retirement. So just maybe there's something else we're not thinking of that would be a better option. Look forward to hearing it on the podcast. Yes, thank you. Bye.
This is a great question. And again, interestingly enough, something that I was asked with a conversation with a client today. And that was about, I think, you know, what is, I think, one of the best savings vehicles for your kids. And that is the 529 plan. There are tax benefits to helping them save for qualified educational expenses. And so the first thing you got to know about 529s is you don't necessarily have to live in the state whose plan you use. A lot of people prefer the plan that Utah has because it has a wider set of investment options, right? 529s are generally limited. You can't just go out there and buy individual stocks. It's whatever ETFs funds happen to be in the plan. And so that's why a lot of people use plans from that state. Now, one thing to know is since, when was it, 2022, you can now roll unused 529 plans into a Roth IRA under specific conditions. And so those conditions are a lifetime limit of $35,000 per beneficiary. It must be open for at least 15 years. There's also some contribution limits, right? Including, you know, how much you're allowed to contribute in general to a Roth in a given year, and that the beneficiary has to be the same for the IRA, the Roth, as was for the 529. And so I think that is helpful because, yes, you are constrained. It can only be for education expenses, related expenses, but should you have leftover funds or should you not use it for an education? There's still optionality there, right? You don't have to necessarily pay the penalty. So with that being said, if you were to have the same amount of money in a 529 and a brokerage account, and you weren't to use any of it or roll any of it over, it is true, you'd be about 10% worse off by using the 529 than a brokerage account. But I just think if you are more than 60% sure that they can use this for education expenses, be it college, be it vocational training, a lot or, you know, a wide array of options, or at least be able to roll it over into that Roth down the road, I think that going with a 529, because of its benefits, because of its flexibility, you can change beneficiaries, you know, generally if you need to. Because of all of this, I think generally going with the 529, as long as you're fairly certain that they might need it for educational expenses, is the way to go. Thanks for the call. Let's tackle two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Francisco, and I'm calling from Colinga, California. And I'm calling about stock ticker WM Waste Management versus RSG Republic Services. And I was just calling to see which one has a better balance sheet and fundamentals and which stock is cheaper. Thanks for all you do and waiting to hear your answer on the next show. Thank you.
So Waste Management is a provider of waste management services. They're collection, recycling, renewable energy generation. They're headquartered in Houston, Texas. They are a fairly large company. Right, about $92 billion market cap. In terms of debt, they don't have that much debt relative to their size, about $23 billion in debt. Forward-looking earnings, 29.2 times forward-looking earnings, well above the average, up 13% over the past year, 15% year-to-date, 12% over the past 3 months. Revenue, up 7.4% on an annualized basis. So the growth is there. The margins are pretty fantastic for the space, and you're seeing that over the past 6 years in terms of how it's trading relative to the S&P 500. It's outperformed its industry in about half of the past 6 years, and they pay a pretty solid dividend. So that was Waste Management. The next one is RSG, and that is Republic Services. Now, Republic Services has a very similar pattern here of relative strength outperformance. Again, it has, you know, several business segments, environmental solutions, recycling, solid waste, similar to Waste Management, up 22% year-to-date, 30% over the past 52 weeks, 18% over the past 3 months. It has outperformed its industry every year of the past 5 years. It has better growth, about 9.3%. It has about similar margins, 12.7%. It pays a dividend that is in the same ballpark. Similar size, $76 billion market cap, and less debt, $12 billion of debt. But it's trading at higher multiple. It's trading at the upper end of its range here, about 34 times forward-looking earnings, the average being 27 times. It's near the five-year high. Price to book, 6.7. Price to cash flow, 19.4. Let's look at a couple other valuation multiples here for Waste Management. Bear with me. Sometimes things take a while to load here. Price to book value 11 times, price to cash flow 17.2 times. You have two very solid companies here. And so when you have two solid companies that have really marginal differences in terms of relative valuation, I wouldn't purchase any of them right now because I do think they are a little expensive on the expensive side, especially relative to their ranges, especially relative to the market melting down a little bit over the past couple of days. But either way, in a situation like this where you have pretty much the same relative valuation on these companies, I would go for the one with more diversification in terms of where its business segments are, right? It's a pretty good split here. Geographically, it's all from the United States. But this one has better growth, right? Better sales growth, a little bit better margins, less debt. That is ticker RSG, Republic Services, Inc. Now we're headed into a break, our final break. So get your live calls in now if you have them. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, as we come out of the break, I wanted to tell you about a special opportunity to enhance your financial knowledge. For a limited time, you can receive the first 3 months of our premium newsletter absolutely free. Just sign up now at investtalk.com. Use the code KPPFLM to redeem your complimentary subscription. Visit our website, investtalk.com, to start your journey to financial literacy today. Offer ends April 30th. Alrighty. Let's tackle one more question. This one from YouTube. It says, hi, Justin and Luke. Great video as always. What are your thoughts on McCoy Global? Ticker MCB. Let's see. Global. MCBCA. Okay. MCB is a equipment technology company. They support oil services, the oil and gas industry. About 6.6% of its revenue comes from Canada, 50% from the United States, the rest from the Middle East and Africa. That's down about 12.68% year to date, down 6% over the past 3 months. It is a $70 million Canadian dollar company, so very, very small on that front. And so these types of companies that are this small tend to not be able to do as good a job weathering some storms. And so in an era of heightened tensions, in a heightened tension trade environment, I am less likely to recommend investing in these micro cap companies, especially in a company that supports, right, 50%. From the United States and Latin America, a company that supports an industry that is potentially at odds with what the current administration's idea is for U.S. energy. And so for this Canadian company, McCoy Global, microcap, $70 million market cap, gonna have to pass. Thanks for watching. Now, some hidden stress bubbling to the surface, right? The U.S. unemployment rate has only risen modestly to about 4.2% since mid-2023. But there are some, let's not say red flags, but maybe bright yellow flags that are coming, that historically have preceded recessions. And that is a decrease in the job finding rate, right? The share of unemployed individuals who are finding work each month. It has been steadily declining since about mid-2023, similar to pre-recession patterns. You also have unemployment duration rising, the amount of time that unemployed people remain unemployed, from 8 weeks to about 10 weeks. And this is before we had tariff pressure, where managers may not be reinvesting, may not be having new openings, may be cutting back. And so with this data coming before what we've already seen in April, it is more than anything, I think, just another sign of a deteriorating economy, such that, like I've said over and over again, like I said at the top of the show, means that your criteria for the companies in your individual portfolios as individual stocks should be stricter than they are in an expansionary phase. It should focus even more and more on high-value businesses. It should focus even more and more on companies with good balance sheets that have a lot of wiggle room in terms of what their leverage looks like and the amount of capital they have to pay that interest. And so it makes perfect sense to me that recession probabilities are on the rise. What does this mean? Excuse me. It may mean that we can't push as far on this trade war. It may mean that the Fed has to be especially cognizant of these indicators in terms of them projecting their rate path forward. Nevertheless, just one data point here. That's why I said it's a bright yellow flag rather than a deep, deep red flag. But still, just like you need to listen when the market says and the market speaks, so too do you need to understand the importance of the labor market in determining the path of monetary policy, fiscal policy, and the path of your portfolios. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, as well as our show on YouTube. For those podcasts, you can get them anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. We really appreciate that. And if you want to go a step further, remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number. Just go to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. We can also help you optimize the potential of your 401k and build you a full personal wealth financial plan. It all starts at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.